Mit Mastercard Business Bonus sichern Sie sich attraktive Rabatte auf Tools und Services für Ihr Unternehmen. Alle Angebote unter mastercard.com/businessbonus.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Jane doesn't mind an apartment with no elevator.
5 flights of stairs is 5 flights of cardio.
Bob is a little less enthusiastic about stairs.
I hate stairs.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle renters and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Jane and Bob found an apartment that's a 4-story walk-up. And Bob?
Yeah, there's a freight elevator she doesn't know about.
What were you talking about?
Oh, nothing.
Bundling without compromise at Geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast.
Oh, hello there. Oh, second week of November. And what a week it is. I hope you're doing well. Welcome back to That Josh Arnold Podcast. I am Josh Arnold. My goodness, what a show we have for you this week. My guest, the supremely talented and very lovely, you! That's right, it's you. And some of you might be saying, Josh, I'm a guy. I don't really enjoy being called lovely. Well, get over it, because, sir, you are one lovely man. All right? You're all lovely. You know why I know that? Because you're listening to this. So, I mean, you don't have to be physically lovely. You could be ugly and lovely. You know what I mean? You could, you're a lovely person for listening, but you could also be ugly physically. You could be hard to look at. But I know that you're not. I'm happy to have you. And, it's gross down here in the basement. There was a flood over the weekend, and they've siphoned a lot of the water out, but there's still, like, there are, like, at least 2 inches of standing water on the ground. My shoes are wet. I'm just, you know, splashing around down here. It's just, I've got to ask if I can do this from the main studio, but I know they'll say no. Anyway, I'm still happy to be with you, and I hope the second week of November is treating you well. I'm the weather, well, where I am is unseasonably warm, but wonderful. You know, I'm going to soak it in before, you know, it gets cold for some months here. And, we had the time change, didn't we? And it gets dark now right away before dinner. So I hope you have your seasonal effectiveness disorder lights and whatnot. I know I do. I'm a sufferer of seasonal effectiveness disorder. My friend Joe Murray says, he actually does a joke on stage. He says, my buddy Josh has seasonal effectiveness disorder. When his food isn't seasoned correctly, he gets really upset. It does make me laugh. but anyway, man, went fishing over the weekend. A bit of a slightly impromptu fishing trip with my brothers. And we were in the Lake of the Ozarks, and the weather and the falling leaves. The only problem with the falling leaves, they were all in the lake. They were all over. So you would cast, and if you didn't immediately hit a leaf with your lure at the top of the water, you were sure to snag one as you were reeling it in. So it was, that got pretty annoying. But other than that, being out there, people burning leaves, the smells of fall, the sights, the sound, I just love it. I love it so much, and I was really happy to be able to spend some time, well, with my brothers and out there in nature. It's good to get outside. So get outside while you can. I hope it's nice where you're at. Our sponsor this week, speaking of nice, is one of my favorites. This week's sponsor, A Good Chip. Oh, yeah, just something to snack on there. You got a crunchy chip, and I am speaking about, I'm using the American word, If you're one of our British friends, crisp is what I'm talking about there. Or if we're talking about Pringles, a crisp. But yeah, just a nice, well, and not even just potato. We could be, it could be a tortilla chip or so maybe I had pumpkin chips recently and they were delicious. And yeah, who doesn't like a nice, good chip, flavorful, maybe a little salty there. And, you know, you can dip it in you can, many dips out there to go along with your chips. And I'd like to thank a good chip for being this week's sponsor. Have one or two or a whole bowl. Maybe just right out of the bag. Maybe you don't even put them in a bowl. You just eat the bag. Go for it. Oh boy, this what we have coming up. I originally the first few episodes we had what was called Vocabulary Corner. Well, that's changed. But Josh, I love learning new vocabulary words. Hey, that's not going anywhere. But it has a new name. I thought about this a little bit, and I went, "All right, let's try a new name. Let's shake it up." Again, this podcast is organic. We're still figuring it out as we go along, and I appreciate you being here for the ride. So let's get right to the new renamed first segment of the week, Vocabulary Station. That's right. We're pulling into Vocabulary Station. Why? Well, we need to stop here and get some supply and learn a new word, huh? And this week's word is, boy, good luck cramming this into any conversation you have this week. If you can use this appropriately this week, email me and let me know at joshpodcast@bobandtom.com. I'm going to try, but it's not going to be easy. This week's word is a noun. It's macroposide. And the definition is the killing of kangaroos. Now, it's a dark, bleak definition. We all love kangaroos. We don't want to think about the slaughter of them, I suppose. But there's this word, which when I came across, I couldn't believe it. Macroposide. It's macro, M-A-C-R-O, poside, as in he was beside himself. Oh, that's ridiculous. P-I-C-I-D-E. But it's pronounced macro. The emphasis is on that second syllable there. Macroposide. It's the killing of kangaroos. And I can't imagine, unless you were a bushman or you're living in the outback or something. I don't know who. Or maybe you're a zookeeper, and all of a sudden you go out there to feed the kangaroos their, what do they eat, shrimp or something? You go out and you've got a handful of shrimp for the kangaroo, and I know they don't eat shrimp. They might eat shrimp, but I know they. Anyway, and you see that they're all dead. Oh my God, all the kangaroos are dead. This is a case of macroposide. What a weird word, man. Anyway. If you can use that this week, I want to hear about it. Macroposide. There's a movie out there that's really good, but it has a couple. It's an unsettling movie anyway, but there are a couple scenes that are really tough to watch because actual macroposide is taking place, and it was not faked in the making of the movie. These Australian hunters went out, and some of the actors went with them, and they're driving these pickup trucks through the outback, and they're just shooting kangaroos. And it's in the context of the movie, it's called Wake in Fright. I saw it years ago on Turner Classic Movies late one night. I'm looking it up as I'm speaking here, so forgive me. Wake in Fright. And it's a great movie. It stars Gary Bond and Donald Pleasance. And Donald Pleasance is just amazing. The great John, I think it's Mayon or Malon. I don't remember. But a fascinating movie. But it's, yeah, those are hard scenes to watch when they're driving around shooting these kangaroos, committing real macropicide. So, but I do recommend the flick, which leads me to the next segment of this week and every week. What I enjoyed this week. Oh, my gosh. I never remember what the song is. I know this is like the third time I think we've used it. And boy, it makes me happy. Doesn't it make you happy? I hope it does. And I hope that you enjoyed many things this week. What I enjoyed, some of you are going to scoff at this, all right? Last week you may have scoffed because I talked about a cartoon on Disney Channel, which I hope you watched, Big City Greens. If you did, let me know. Let me know if you enjoyed it. If you didn't, don't waste your time. Don't go. You don't need to write me and say, "Hey, I didn't like it." Why do you want to put your energy into something you didn't care for and ruin my, 2 minutes of me, whenever I'm reading it? So, what I enjoyed this week, it was not enjoyed by many people when it first came out. It hit theaters in May of 1987, and I saw it on video cassette. You know, late 80s, early 90s, my parents rented it because they were curious. They'd heard it was so awful. And I remember watching it and my dad laughing a lot. And afterwards, my dad going, "What? That was not bad. I don't know why all the negativity. It was pretty entertaining." And I remember as a kid kind of laughing at a few parts. A lot of it went over my head. I'll get to what I'm talking about. Well, I'll just tell you, the movie Ishtar, it's one of the most notorious bombs in cinematic history, and it had a very troubled production. It stars Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman, and it was the first and last movie to be directed by Elaine May, because it did so poorly, she really wasn't. I think it's a combination that she wasn't offered another shot and she probably didn't want to take it because it couldn't have felt good to read all the negative reviews and hear all the hate and the jokes. I mean, I remember jokes flying around when I was a kid on Carson or whatever about how awful Ishtar was. But I'm telling you, it's pretty damn entertaining. It is. There are some really funny lines. There's some very silly set pieces, and man, it really isn't bad. I enjoyed it, which is why it's the thing I enjoyed this week. It was on cable. I've got a few cable. I make pay cable money. That's right. I've got Showtime there and TMC, the movie channel, and Stars, and it was on one of those. And I went, you know what? I'm gonna watch this. And I found myself laughing quite a bit. And it does, there are some moments that are slow. Here's the story. Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty are a couple of would-be songwriters who work together a la Simon and Garfunkel. They want to be the next Simon and Garfunkel, essentially. But they're not good. And that's where a lot of the comedy stems from. Their songs that they write and perform are bad. And they get a job in the Middle East and then get entangled in a CIA sort of mission. It's all very far-fetched, and it's filled with a lot of 80s foreign policy references and things. And but it's terrific, and Charles Grodin is in it, and he almost steals the movie. He's such a wonderful actor and so funny. You know what? If you saw it and you didn't like it, give it another chance. If you haven't seen it, see if you like it. Try it on for size. Ishtar. Its reputation is bigger than kind of the movie itself. You know, it's most people may not have seen the movie or don't remember it, but they know if somebody says, "Oh boy, this is like Ishtar," they know exactly what you mean. It means it was a colossal flop. Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino love Ishtar. And throw me into that mix. I mean, my gosh, what are you not doing here? Or why aren't you watching it? And actually, I mentioned that it was the butt of many jokes. Gary Larson, the creator of The Far Side, arguably the best comic to run in the Sunday funnies, as it were, he had a panel. It was one of his far sides was the video store in hell. And it was just a picture of people in a video store, and every movie was Ishtar. And he later, he's quoted as saying that he was on a plane once, and Ishtar was showing, and he found himself to be really enjoying it. He was very entertained, and he actually issued an apology for that joke. It was the only apology, he says, that he ever put out there for one of his cartoons, and God bless him for it. That's he said he'd written that, he had made that cartoon before he had seen the movie, of course, and after he saw it, he went, you know what, I was wrong. That's a pretty good flick. So anyway, give it a shot, and if you don't like it, hey, you watch something that was sort of part of cinematic history, and you'll now, you know, you can now know what people are talking about. So it's a good road movie. That's all it is. Elaine May set out to make a sort of a Crosby Hope road movie, and I think she did it fairly successfully. And who doesn't, you know, you get to see a lot of scenery and locations that you may not have ever seen before. And, well, you should be doing that in life anyway. And that brings me to part two of my sort of audio autobiography. Because last week, well, you know, every week I like to take a question or so, or two rather. And last week the question was big, and therefore the answer is fairly big. And I think we'll take two or three podcasts to answer fully. It came from Dustin, and the question was, he has very nice things to say, of course. Why wouldn't he? And then he goes on to ask, it sounds like you have you've done a lot of different things professionally over the years. Did you ever feel like your life had no direction because of all the different hats you've worn? If so, how did you actively refine and focus your life to get you on the professional path that made you happy? Well, the quick answer is yes. I've had many different jobs. I do not feel like my life had no direction because I had those jobs for a reason, and my end game has always been the same, to be in some form of entertainment, to perform in some way, and I was always working towards that. And if you haven't listened to last week's podcast, do so. I talk a little bit about some of my first jobs and wanting to get into comedy and everything. And I left off last week just before I was hopping a plane to Korea. My last day job didn't work out, and I had been researching teaching overseas because I wanted to travel while I was still fairly young. I was in my later 20s and single, and thought, you know what, now's the time to take advantage of doing a little globetrotting. And so I also wanted a gig where I could work less than 40 hours a week. And from what I understood, teaching overseas, you would work a few hours a day, and then you'd have the rest of the day and your weekends to yourself. And you also made good money. So I was researching this, and I found out that Korea was like the only country that, if you taught English over there, they would pay for your airfare, and no other, like Japan and China and stuff, they weren't offering airfare. But the Korean schools were, and I was pretty broke. I was very broke, actually. I had negative money. Another reason I wanted to go over there was to, they pay for all your living expenses except for like food and you know, whatever other material things you want to buy, but they paid for rent and you got a salary, which back then it equaled about $2,000 a month. And so when you are making I figured, hell, if I'm making $2,000 a month and I have no bills, I could probably, and everything is pretty cheap in Korea. It was like, all right, I might spend $500 a month on food and activities. And send the rest home to pay off pay off debts I owed. And that's what I ended up doing. I reached out via email to a few different recruiters who lived in the United States. They were usually of Korean heritage, and they would hook up schools in Korea with teachers in America or England or Canada, and they would get everything together for you, tell you what you needed to do, get you hired, you know, set up interviews with schools over there, and yeah, eventually get everything taken care of for you. So I interviewed with one recruiter, and he liked me a lot, and ended up saying, yes, I'm going to get you a job. And so he would hook me up with phone interviews with schools, and I only had like maybe three or four before I found a school that wanted me and I wanted to go there. It was I remember one interview. I was in a car with my buddies because I had to talk to them on Korean time, which is I was in Central Standard Time, and Korean time was 16 hours ahead. So we had to like, but anyway, this one interview took place at night, and I remember I was in a car full of other comedians because we were on our way to an open mic, and I'm in the back seat, and I'm already kind of like, all right, man, I'm in this group with a bunch of smart, a bunch of Weisenheimers, and I hope they just keep their mouths shut while I'm trying to get this gig. And I'm talking to the person at some Korean school in Seoul, the capital of Korea. And I'm talking, and they're telling me, hey, you're going to be teaching English and gym. And so what my friends heard in the car was okay, so I'll be teaching English for part of the day, and then I'll also be teaching physical education. And the whole car erupted in laughter because who the hell am I to teach gym? I have no business doing that. And it's not just because I'm overweight. It's just I'm also not good at sports. I mean, I kind of know my way around a wiffle ball bat, kind of. But other than that, leave me out of it. So I love playing them. I'm just not good. That interview ended up, they weren't going to pay me as much as this other school in a smaller city was going to pay me. So I ended up, hooking up with that school, and they flew me out. Actually, I went with one of my best friends. His name is Russ Olson, and we did improv together for years, and we maintained a really solid friendship, and he wanted to go too. He wanted to go to Korea. In fact, I kind of think it was serendipitous. He had been researching at the same time I had been, and we went, hey, man, why don't we try to work this out to where we both go and teach at the same school? Well, it ended up that he ended up working at a school about a 30, 45-minute bus ride from the school I was working in. We both got jobs in pretty much central South Korea, closer to the west coast of South Korea, but still fairly centralized. And the town that I got my teaching gig in was called Jeonju, and it was lovely, just a lovely town. It's the 16th largest city in South Korea, about 650,000 people, a little over that, at least when I was there. And it means perfect region. And which it was for me. Why? It was a big city, but it was also surrounded by beautiful rural Korea. And in fact, they coexisted. It was not rare to be walking down a street in Jeonju and between two tall sort of skyscrapers or apartment buildings, there'd be a small, almost shack-looking thing with a big garden in the back and, you know, Korean women with baskets. And they were going and getting, you know, they were picking cabbages. It was almost like these little farms in between big city, big city buildings. And it was a wonderful combination. And that's what I wanted, because I wanted to go to Korea, well, for the reasons I already mentioned, but also my great uncle, my grandmother's, my mother's mother's brother, he and his family had lived in Korea for a few years, and I really liked that guy, my great uncle Jack. I thought he was really funny. He had a tremendous wit, and he was very nice to me, and he smoked cigars, which was like simultaneously obnoxious and charming, and he taught me how to play bumper pool. I just have really good memories of my Uncle Jack. He was a fun guy, and there were rumors, actually, and I'd love to be able to dig into this. I just don't know how I could. My grandma was convinced my Uncle Jack worked for the CIA. He had some vague job that would send him around the world, and he always seemed to be in an area at a time when there was some sort of turmoil or political upheaval. And my grandma kind of put, according to her, she put two and two together and went, my Uncle Jack is involved in some sort of the CIA or something. So I don't know whether or not it's true. I'd love to think that my Uncle Jack was a spook working for the government, involved in some sort of insane espionage. But to me, he was just a funny, nice man, super old. I mean, I was little, but he was, who would smoke these cigars and make jokes. And yeah, made me laugh. Anyway, I thought it would be nice to live in a place where he lived. And I remember him talking a little bit about the countryside of Korea. So I was happy to be in a place where I had modern amenities, but I could enjoy the rural surroundings. It was terrific. And teaching was quite a gig. I had never taught before. And I arrived sick as a dog. Here's what happened. I was scheduled to leave St. Louis. I don't remember the exact day, but it was like March 15th. And around March 5th, they called. We had goodbye parties with my family planned and with my friends, a big bash planned to, sort of say, hey, good. I signed a year contract. I'll be gone for a full year. And let's celebrate. Let's go all out, and I'll see everybody. And my dad's parents were alive, and my mom's mom was alive, so I was going to go see all of them and visit before I left. Well, my recruiter called on like March 5th and said, "You're leaving in 2 days." What? And so we had to. And this was the same with my buddy Russ. They cut his was cut back too. So I had to rush around and just sort of say bye to people and get packed. You're packing for a year. So pretty much everything, all my clothes and everything I was taking with me. And it was a whirlwind. And in the middle of all that, I got one of the worst flus I've ever had. I was just sick as a dog. And poor Russ caught it from me. Because we would make out on the plane, and if you heard that and didn't immediately perk your ears up, you're not listening. That was a test. Of course, my buddy and I didn't make out on the plane. At the terminal, oh my God, it was all right, this is getting off the rails. Anyway, he did get sick, though, as I was coming off of it. So arrived in Korea sick as a dog, and started training at the school. It was called ECC, which stood for like English, two words that start with C. And here's what I did. I taught all day, Monday through Friday, and then on some Saturdays at first. And I would teach kindergarten up to high school. And as the day progressed, the kids got older. So in the morning, I was teaching kindergarten. In the afternoon, third, fourth grade at night, because I would start at like 8 a.m. and ended 8 p.m., essentially. Now, I did have a couple hours off in between there, so I would teach classes from 8 to 10 and then be off until 1 and then go back and teach 1 to 4 and then 5 to 9, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, because I guess the last class started around 8. So, we were there all day with, you know, those two-hour breaks where I could go back to my apartment or I could go to a restaurant, whatever, walk around. So I got to experience teaching all grade levels. I did not speak any Korean. In fact, they insisted that they only hire people who didn't know Korean because they wanted the English teachers to only speak English so that the kids were forced to pay attention and learn. They didn't want anybody to sort of have a crutch. But here's how the lessons worked. Let's say at 8 a.m. I had my kindergarten class. I would go in and teach a lesson from 8 to 8:50. And then that same class from 9 to 9:50, they would have a Korean speaking teacher, a native Korean, teach the exact same lesson. So the kids get the full immersive English lesson, and then they got the same lesson in Korean, and they could ask that Korean teacher questions that they may not have known how to ask me or that kind of thing. So it was very effective. I mean, I watched these kindergartners who knew, maybe they knew like hello or hi or happy birthday, or, you know, things that they would hear on television and stuff. Within months, they were speaking a lot of English, and it was pretty rewarding. I could see the fruits of my labor. I could see them really working and enjoying it, and it was really sweet. My kindergartners, I adored, and I had to learn pretty quickly. Teaching over there, pretty different. And here's what I mean. It's going to sound weird to a lot of people because it's just not like this here, but that you could have, things like that. You could hug your student. In fact, they insisted that there be almost a, I don't want to say physical relationship because that sounds like, you know, that just doesn't sound, those aren't the words, but it was not. I remember the first time a kid came up to me and was like hanging on one of my legs and kids were hugging me. And I remember thinking, this is going to get me fired and sent back to America. And they had to, and other foreign teachers, we were called, had to explain, no, this is not only is this okay, it's sort of encouraged. Now, of course, everything was appropriate. There was nothing inappropriate about it at all. It was really nice. You know, it was like having a room full of nieces and nephews. I loved it. Things did get a little too physical once, and I'll explain. This was with maybe like a fifth grader of mine. There's a game that Korean students would play. You may have heard me talk about this on the Bob and Tom Show, called Dong Chim, which translates roughly to fecal needle. Dong means poop in Korean, and chim means needle. And what they would do is they would do this to each other all the time. They couldn't believe how funny this was. If it happened here, it would be immediately ended. But so what these kids would do is they would put their two hands together. And their two index fingers would be pressed together and pointing out while the rest of their it looked like they were, you know, when you would play like cops and robbers or something and you were making a fake gun with both hands. That's what they were doing. So their thumbs would be together and up in the air, their index fingers straight out, and the rest of their fingers clasped together and folded back. And so they were making this sort of gun, and they would run up behind each other and jam their two index fingers into the ass of their buddy as hard as they could. It was sort of like giving a wedgie in prison, we'll say. I mean, what? Just a total violation. They couldn't believe how funny this was. And it happened to me once. This one student came up behind me. I was kind of aware of this game. Never in a second thought that I would be the victim of it. I mean, this kid ran up behind me and did it. I had no idea it was coming, and I lost my mind. I mean, I felt bad because I immediately turned around and just yelled at this kid, and he looked so scared because there's this towering, gigantic American dude, you know, yelling at him in a language he barely understands. But I had to make it clear, hey, I know that that's a game that's fine here. With me, it's not cool. So, so yes, I got dong-chimmed once. I remember one time walking into a classroom. I was walking with this girl, Becky, who was this British girl. And she was walking into her classroom, and she opened the door. And there was, I get they were probably fourth, fifth grade, and there was this kid on the ground, and he was like on his shoulders, and his legs were sticking straight up in the air, and they were completely akimbo. And his friend was standing over him, dong-chimming him repeatedly, and they were both laughing like hyenas. And I was just dumbfounded. I couldn't, and Becky just, oh my God, she just starts yelling at them. She was just, you know, as baffled as I was, and man, just a difference. There were other sort of, you know, well, unpleasant differences, I'll say. The bathrooms at the school, the signs, whether it was the men's room or the ladies' room. Now, these are the signs are meant for kids, essentially, because it's a school for kids. Well, instead of saying girls or boys or men's or women's in any language, it was just a drawing. And for the men's, it was the drawing of a penis with pee coming out of it. And for the woman's room, it was what looked like in sort of an ass with with pee coming out of it. And I was just like, okay, well, that's one way to to let us know. And when you had to wash your hands after using the bathroom, it was just a bar of soap that everybody shared and one hand towel. And that really bummed us out. I mean, yeah, it was just kind of creepy. There also were no water fountains. There was a water cooler with one metal cup that you drink, that the kids would drink out of. So one kid would fill it up, drink out of it, and pass it to the next kid. Just the same cup would go all day through, like, probably touch 100 different mouths. they just weren't too concerned. And so there were things like that I constantly had to get used to. And once I did, and some of those things I never took part in. I never drank out of the metal cup. I had my own cup. In fact, I always had this big cup of water with me. I was talking all day. I already drink a ton of water throughout the day anyway. And I was always had it with me. And one of my Korean students made me a letter and a little picture. And she handed it to me, and it was in Korean, and I had no idea what it said. But I loved it. It was so sweet. And she was one of my favorite students, and I very proudly took it into the teacher's lounge and had it at my desk. And I go, I wonder what this says. And I handed it to one of the Korean teachers, and I said, hey, what does this say? And she read it and burst into laughter. And I said, oh, well, what does it say? And she said, Joshy teacher. They called me Joshy teacher. First off, Josh in Korean, when it's spelled out in their letter system, no word ever ends with sh. It's always, so it doesn't end with sh, it's she. Every word ends with she. So like if you said oh my gosh, they would say oh my goshy. That's just how it is. And so Joshy was, they weren't being cute, that's just how they pronounced my name, but it sounded very cute. And they would always say teacher after your name, because that's how they would say it in Korean. It was always, you know, the Korean teacher's last name and then teacher. And so, which was maybe, I forget exactly what the word was. Anyway, so the Joshi teacher, so this the little girl's letter said, Joshi teacher, you are like a hippo. So, of course, the Korean teacher was howling. And she told me, and I go, oh, is it, I go, I'm like a hippo. Is it because I'm, you know, fat? And I mean, in America, I'm overweight. In Korea, I was fat. You know what I mean? Like, because they tend to not be, well, they're not nearly as fat of people as we are. So I said, is it because I'm, you know, a fat guy? And she goes, no. Well, she goes, I'll find out. And I go, I'm not worried about it. It's a little kid. It's sweet to me nonetheless. And well, later she found out. She talked to the little girl. Sally was her name because they got to pick English names for themselves. And so we had to refer to them as their English names. So she talked to Sally, and Sally told her that I was like a hippo because I always had water with me, and I was always just chugging these waters, which made it even sweeter. And my goodness, it just well, it makes it really makes me smile big thinking about it today. And one of the things that I really enjoyed with teaching the kindergartners was I would teach them, and then we would go have breakfast in the cafeteria. And that same girl, Sally, I would sit with them, with the kindergartners, and eat with them. And it had to have looked comical. I wish somebody had taken a photo, but they were these tiny, very low to the ground tables and kindergarten class chairs. And that's what I had to sit on and eat at. So it's all these little kindergartners at their little table. And this giant American dude with a goatee bent over, sitting on this ridiculously tiny chair, eating with them. And I'm sitting there, and Sally is sitting across from me. And she looks up at me one morning, and rice and kimchi are served with every meal. Kimchi is fermented cabbage. It's very spicy. They eat it all every meal, so breakfast included, and same with rice. And so she's got a mouthful of rice, and she looks up at me like she's concerned. And so I'm looking at her, and I'm about to ask if she's okay the best I can, because she wasn't that advanced in English. And she sneezed and covered me in wet rice. I mean, it was in my hair, in my goatee, just all over my face. Because as you can imagine, if you've got a mouthful of rice and you have to sneeze, well, it's coming out. You're not going to be able to keep your mouth closed, and especially if you're a three-year-old, which she was. So, because kindergarten started very young there. So I also remember that they would serve fish once a week or so. And it was delicious. They were like these just cut up fish nuggets. I don't know what kind of fish. And they were awesome, crispy. They weren't fried, but they had like a crispy outside. But they were not deboned at all. So I was sitting I would just be sitting there watching these kindergartners take these giant bites of fish and then root through their mouths and pull out these tiny needle-like fish bones that any one of them could choke to death on. I was like, this, again, this would never happen in America. But here they're not as concerned about it. And one of my favorite things about teaching the kindergartners was in the wintertime, they would have their, we would finish class. And before they got on the bus, they would be getting their book bags together, and they would put their coats on. And I remember one kid could not get his coat zipped up, so he came over to me, and he, through a series of sort of gestures, he would speak to me in Korean, but I didn't understand any of it, so I was looking at his gestures. He didn't know how to zip up his coat. So I sat down on a little, kindergarten chair there, and I zipped up his coat for him. And the other kids took notice. And it's so sweet. And I really did love these kids. So I'm getting a little, sort of wistful here. But they lined up behind this kid, and they all wanted their coats to be, they all wanted me to zip up their coats for them. And so then every day, that was the thing. That became a thing where they would all line up at the end of class, and I would sit down and zip up their coats for them and, to tell them to have a good day and that they did a good job. I have really fond memories of that. It was, it was just really, really nice. And as the day would progress, again, the kids got older and they got better at English, and they got, their personalities were starting to show themselves more. And they were funny, and they were kids. They were crazy rambunctious because their regular schools were so strict that when they got to the this English academy, they really cut loose. And corporal punishment is still a thing there. At least it was in 2006, 2005 and 2006 when I was there. So if they messed up in class at the regular school, they would get hit. Not with, they weren't getting punched, but the teachers had these like wooden cane type things. And if you got, if you didn't do your homework or you didn't, you smart mouth the teacher or something, they were allowed to hit you on the palm or hit you in the back of the legs. And so their schools were very strict. And so then when they would come to these ancillary schools, they knew that we wouldn't and couldn't hit them, the foreign teachers, the Americans and Canadians and whoever else. That said, the Korean teachers could still hit them. And I remember there was a teacher. Her English name was Nil, and I never had the heart to tell her, hey, I don't think that's a name in any language, but N-I-L. Anyway, she was, I don't want to be crude, right? Crazy hot. Insanely sexy. It was ridiculous. And she dressed the part. She would wear these crazy tight skirts and thigh-high boots and like these sort of tight blouses. Like, she knew she was hot, and she wanted to make sure everybody else knew. And she was kind of mean. Which was also kind of hot. So she was considered among the student body to be the strictest of teachers. Well, again, I would teach an hour, and then a Korean teacher would teach the same lesson an hour later. Well, I'm walking down the hall, and I see some of my students lined up against the wall in the hallway with their hands up on the wall and their legs spread like they're going to be searched, like they're like they're under arrest or something. And I go, guys, what did you do? Because I knew they were in trouble, but I thought that was their punishment, to stand against the wall. I thought, because I had seen things like that before. Sometimes if you didn't have your homework, the teacher would do that old thing where they would make you stand up and hold a book in each hand, and you had to stand there like Lady Liberty with the whatever that is, the scales, the scales, and just hold a book in each hand. The whole class, like, it was kind of barbaric by our standards. So I go, guys, what did you do? And the one student looked at me and said, "Nil teacher, very angry." And I said, "Okay, yeah, so you're in trouble." And as soon as I said that, Nil walked out of one of the classrooms with this big, like, sort of bamboo cane and just started beating these boys, these three boys, on the backs of their knees with this stick so hard. Like, it, the welts must have been glorious. And at first, it was so hard. And the kids were so bummed out, of course, that I didn't laugh right then. But I would be lying if I didn't say I went into a classroom and howled. I couldn't believe how funny it was. Because I also knew these kids, and they were smart, Alex. They were good kids, but they were punks. Like, they were... I knew that they deserved it. I was also laughing at how insane this sight was. This like, hot Asian chick with a stick that businessmen around the world would pay hundreds of dollars for this to happen to them. Like, there are guys out there that would have killed to be these three boys. And she's just hitting them so insanely hard and, like, yelling at them in Korean. So I didn't know what was being said. Oh, God. It made me very, very happy. So... So, yeah, I ended up doing that. I ended up teaching over there for close to 2 years because I re-signed after the first year went so quickly and it was so fulfilling. And I was doing what I had hoped. I was making money. I liked the job I was doing and I had time to write and to experience things and... To just be fully immersed in a completely different culture and really learn a lot about myself and spend time with one of my best friends who now lives in England with his wife. And we don't talk but a couple times a year, if that. And but my gosh, the memories he and I have are I could only... And I wouldn't dare strongly compare these, but it was sort of like being in the military. We had an experience together overseas that none of our other friends had. And so there are some inside jokes that we have, and there's some references that only he and I know, and some very, very fond memories. And I'm sure, you know, as this podcast grows and as time goes on, that you'll hear more about my time in Korea, and I love it. I love it as a country. I love the people, and I loved teaching over there. I don't think I'm a great teacher, and I don't think that I'd be a great teacher here, but I enjoyed it, and I miss my students, and my gosh, those kindergartners are adults now. They... are in their early 20s, and I wonder if they remember me. I wonder what they remember and if they, you know, ever think about me, because I think about them and I think about what kind of people they became and are becoming and how they are. And did I have any effect on them at all? I hope I did, because they certainly had an effect on me, and I'm a better person for meeting them and knowing them and teaching them. And if you ever get the chance, if you're young, well, any age, if you have the opportunity in your life to do something like that, I would say jump on it. Google how do I teach in wherever you want to go, and if it's for you and you know, it's something you want to try, or you know somebody who's interested in this, maybe one of your children or anyone in your life, if they're considering it, I highly recommend it. Do your research, of course, but you're not going to regret it. And hell, if you don't like it, get on a plane, go home. You're not stuck there. So, but you're going to, I think you will like it. I look forward to getting back to Korea. I have not been back since 2006, and I want to. I want to go, and I want to walk the streets that I want to walk by my apartment complex, and I want to walk by that school, and I want to see what's changed and what's the same. And I'll get there. It'll be. I think it'll be great. So, this week, next week, I'll tell you about what happened when I got back from Korea, and tell you about what got me to where I am right now, sitting in the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios. This week, what I would like for all of us to work on, well, I would be remiss if I didn't if we didn't do this the proper intro for this. What to work on this week? And the answer would be my timing. I saw when the song was going to start, and I did not speak late enough. I spoke too soon. So, what to work on this week? Oh, this is one of my favorite things to do. I hope you do it. And if you've never done it, try it this week. It's really fun and rewarding. And all too often, you'll go online or you'll be in line somewhere and you'll hear somebody complaining about, you know, service or you'll read about somebody's bad experience. And sometimes I'd say often you read them and you go, that wasn't that bad of an experience. You lighten up. You know, what the hell? Well, what I would like you to do, and I never write bad reviews. If I had a bad experience, I don't take the time to reflect on it by yelping or anything like that. It was a bad experience. I don't want to spend my time thinking about it or anything like that. So what I prefer to do is to write reviews that are good or write even better. And this is what I want you to do. Well, however you do it, report good service. If you get good service this week, and you will, let somebody know. Either go on Yelp and say, you know what? The clerk at my neighborhood pharmacy was so kind to me, and I just really, really appreciate it, and I wanted to let you know about it. It's wonderful. What I like to do is, if I get good service, ask to talk to the manager. And it's a tricky thing because you get good service and then you go, can I please speak to your manager? And that person's immediately worried. They don't think you're going to be... How often does somebody ask to see the manager when it's a positive thing? So they're kind of trained to go, oh man, what did I mess up? In fact, I've said, can I please speak to your manager? And they've said, oh my gosh, what can I? Is there anything I can fix? What did I do? And I said, no, I just want to speak to your manager. And when the manager comes over... And again, you know what? It might be tough this week because we're not really all going to restaurants and we're not going to as many stores. So maybe it's better online or something. But if you're in a drive-thru or whatever, I think you can make this work. Let their supervisor know that they did a good job and that they should be happy that that person is working for them. Just let them know. It's a really nice thing to do. It only takes a minute out of your day. But you know what it does? It really makes the day of that person. First off, the manager likes to hear it. They're relieved that you're not upset about something, first off. Second, they're happy to know that they've got a good person working for them. And then they go to that person. They say, you know what? That guy or that woman, let me know what a fine job you're doing, and I really appreciate it. And it makes everybody's day. So do that. Spread a little love. Report good service. And... report back here next week. I'm going to finish talking about my professional life ad nauseum. I hope you're enjoying it. I do. And I've left some things out in both weeks so far, but I will get to them eventually. You know, stories are going to come out, memories are going to resurface, and I'm going to share them with you. And I hope you're enjoying it. I'm certainly enjoying talking to you. And email me more questions at joshpodcast@bobandtom.com. I love hearing from you. And we will see you again. Oh, and subscribe, if you will, and leave a rating. Whatever you do. If you you know what? Maybe that could be your good service this week. You could give me a nice rating, but only if you enjoyed it. Anyway, we will talk to you next week. Goodbye, everybody.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.